State Assembly is scheduled to vote Wednesday on a bill that would replace the Government Accountability Board, or GAB, with two commissions. One would oversee elections, the other ethics. Each commission would have three Republican and three Democratic members. Republicans pushing the breakup of GAB says it has not worked as planned when it was created in 2007. So it's time to ask two former GAB members and the current GAB chair about all this. Thanks to my left, Wea Mike, a GAB member from 2008 through 2010, chair in 2010, a former Dane County and Court of Appeals judge. David Deininger, a GAB member 2008 and 2010 through 13, chair 2008 and 2013, former Greene County and Court of Appeals judge. And Gerald Nickel, a GAB member since 2008 and current board chair. He's a former Dane County District Attorney and Dane County judge. Well, that was a mouthful, gentlemen. Time to talk to you guys. Let's ask the 10,000-foot question. What has GAB done wrong to be targeted by the legislature? Mr. Chair, do you want to go first?
Well, I don't think they've done anything wrong. But if you look at the audit, and we just recently had an audit, I think we could have been better in our record keeping and some technical stuff. And all of that, which we've addressed, and are in compliance with what they found to be inadequate in terms of our responsibilities. But in terms of major responsibilities, I believe we've met them.
Okay. Judge Deininger?
Well, I obviously agree with Judge Nichols' assessment. I think from the perspective of those who are wanting to change the GAB, what we've done wrong is that we are fulfilling the mission for which we were created probably too well, and that is to be applying the laws as written to the facts as best we can tell them in an unbiased and nonpartisan way. And that has obviously triggered some discomfort in some quarters.
And Judge Bill?
I think Judge Deininger is exactly right. The first thing I thought of was what we've done wrong is to do exactly what we were supposed to do, and that is be an impartial, nonpartisan regulator of the electoral and campaign financing process and state ethics. And I think that what has led to the problem, as far as I can tell, is that we've done all of that.
Well, okay, just to be clear, all three of you gentlemen don't see any need for the bill that the Assembly is going to vote on Wednesday, correct? Let's just put that on the record.
I think that it's what it does is go back to stage one, things as they existed prior to creation of the board, and the creation of the board grew out of a long-time scandal in the legislature.
The caucus scandal.
The caucus scandal. And I think to go back, particularly after the board has performed as it has since its inception and earned the comments that experts have made that it really is a model for the rest of the country.
Judge Deininger, you served in the Assembly.
And I did.
I covered you then, sir. And
you're telling both of our ages.
Let's move on then before we dwell on that. So talk to me about the politics of this bill in the GAB. Has GAB been so effective that it has offended lawmakers? The chamber in which you used to serve is going to debate this on Wednesday. Talk about the raw politics, sir.
Well, when you are in the majority in either house of the legislature, and of course one party right now has both houses and the governor's office, when you have majority control of state government, you expect state agencies to do things your way. And when you have a group that's independent and doesn't always do things the way you would have them, I think that draws a reaction, an adverse reaction, and we're seeing it right now.
Well, one of the criticisms that sponsors of the bill say was maybe we didn't have it right in 2007 when we put retired judges on the board because they didn't have enough political acumen. Can somebody talk about that? We have all heard that criticism.
Well, I think if the aim is impartiality and nonpartisanship, I think it's a perfect marriage because judges, in my experience, whether, as my colleagues tonight, have served in partisan offices prior to becoming a judge, or whether or not the nonpartisanship is always there. It amazes me to some degree, but I've lived with it for a long time, and it is there.
Well, Judge Nickel is the current chair. Let me ask you this. Should, in hindsight, should it have been 6 retired judges plus 2 partisans? Because that's been one of the compromises. Or did they get it right in 2007 with 6 retired judges?
I think they got it right when they enacted the legislation in, 2007?
Yeah.
Yeah. And I don't see the need for the 2 partisans, one from each party, to be on the board. When you said the judges were inexperienced in terms of politics.
Raw partisan politics.
Yeah, raw partisan politics. I don't think that's necessarily true, because most of us have had some experience with that. And I had some extensive experience before I came. I ran Gerald Ford's campaign for this district when he was up for president. But, you know, when we came into being, we were given a big responsibility. And a big responsibility was to take and look at the administrative code dealing with elections, dealing with the election process, dealing with lobbying, dealing with ethics, and we had to review all those codes, individual code sections,
yes,
in order to either accept them or reject them. And that took the bulk of most meetings, and for 5 meetings. We don't meet every day. We meet probably 5 times a year, 6 times a year. So we didn't have a chance to get the orientation that normally that we're giving now to new board members who come on board. And then when you place on top of that the recalls and all the other additional responsibilities which we have to meet, because we must enforce and explain the law and enforce it, explain it to our our clerks out there, which we have 1,853 municipal clerks.
Yes,
I know that number, and 72 county clerks, and we have about 3,000 polling places, and we train all these workers.
Which brings me to this question. Thank you for the institutional memory. Was the mandate that GAB was given too broad? And the reason I'm asking is, when I go back and look over the major changes that GAB has had to deal with, Citizens United and the Impact and other rulings that threw out campaign finance laws, photo ID to vote, number of lawsuits, on again, then off again, and now on, master list of voters compiling, changing the primary date, 2011 and 2012 recall elections for governor, lieutenant governor, and almost half of the state Senate. Was the mandate too broad, gentlemen?
I don't think the mandate was too broad. I think that we've been through now pretty much an extended period of, you wouldn't really call it raw politics, but things that were perhaps unprecedented. Citizens United, the recall elections, these were once in a lifetime events. And I don't think the mere fact that they have happened meant that the board has more than it can chew. I don't think so at all. And I think the staff has conducted itself just admirably in terms of the work and the workload. I was telling someone the other day that I've had the experience of being the administrative head of 2, probably really 3 agencies, the Department of Justice as Deputy Attorney General, Public Service Commission as its
chair
chairman,
of the PSC,
and being Chief Judge of the Court of Appeals for 9 years. And I would stack the employees of the GAB up against any that I've seen in any of those agencies in the past. To me, being on GAB was a privilege. And I think we use the term raw politics. I don't know that Wisconsin would benefit by bringing raw politicians back into the process.
Of all that, of all these items, I didn't even mention John Doe that the GAB has had to deal with. We'll get to John Doe. Which has been the toughest issue for you? Judge Nickel, you want to go first? Was it the recalls? Was it the John Doe, sir?
Well, the John Doe would be the toughest just because of the aftermath and what it could portend for the people of the state of Wisconsin if they do enact Representative Boss's and Knutson's legislation. So, but the recall really unprecedented.
Yes.
And we had both sides mad there, so you know that you're doing something right. Democrats were mad because they felt there were phony candidates put up and wanted us to disqualify. And we said no, because they had the required number of signatures, which we examined and verified. And that's what the law requires. And so you make, and you know, as judges, you're used to one side or the other side being mad at you, because every time you make a decision, you're never pleasing both sides, usually.
Right.
And so, and that, and then the other side, the Republicans, were mad at us because, you know, they brought up this Mickey Mouse and Adolf Hitler names. We disqualified those names outright, but we also told them to, you know, it isn't our responsibility to search out these names beyond to verify that they are citizens of the district they're in and that they live at the address that they're set. And in that recall, we threw out on our own, I think it was 4,001 signatures, which we found were duplicate. And then we threw out another 26,000 where the information that they put on the recall petitions was inadequate to sustain the petition.
I want to come back to something you said in a little bit, after I give Judges Deininger and Ike a chance. Remind me to come back to this. What's at issue?
Sure,
what's at stake? What's at stake if this bill passes? But when, that's being debated. But I want to give Judge Deininger and Judge Ike a chance to talk about their toughest calls.
I'd have to say probably the same thing. The recall season there, and it extended for about a year and a half between some of the Senate recalls and then the gubernatorial recalls. And the reason that was so difficult is there were time constraints, time pressures, that deadlines that had to be met, or you go into court to get them extended, and there was a lot of, obviously, litigation going on. The volume of paperwork, the petitions that the GAB and the staff had to deal with during that stretch was just, well, unprecedented is almost too tame a word, but that was the case. And that was kind of layered on top of just the normal business of the GAB, administering the elections and the ethics codes and so forth. So that was a very stressful period of time for the staff, certainly, and for the board members. So I'd have to point to the same thing.
Judge Eric?
Yeah, I really can't add anything to what Dave and Jerry have said. I think that when Judge Deininger mentioned that the recall came and the board and its staff still had their day-to-day work to do, mm-hmm. is what I meant a moment ago when I said this is something that's a once-in-a-lifetime occurrence, and I don't think that the fact that it happened and the work that it caused should be any reason to change the structure of the board.
Okay, now let's get into the bill that Speaker Voss and Senate Majority Leader Fitzgerald and Representative Knudsen. What's wrong with the old, going back to the old two commissions, one elections, and one ethics model? And under the bill, it's going to be up Wednesday, you'd have three R's and three D's on each of those panels. What's wrong with that? What's at stake? Judge Nickel.
Well, I don't think it will work, and the reason I don't think it will work is because it hasn't worked in the past. A good friend of mine and a colleague of Judge Ike is Judge Gordon Mize, who sat on the Court of Appeals and also was a trial court judge and also sat on GAB. He also sat on the State Elections Board for 3 years. He said it was a disaster. Everything was gridlock. It was always 3-3, and they could never get anything accomplished. And you know, on GAB, with my two friends here, we always don't agree, but we respect each other's opinion. And you don't have gridlock. And so it functions very well, and it functions unbiasedly, fairly, and with balance. You won't have that with the new.
So your prediction, both panels will just not work. Gridlock 3-3?
Yeah, that's my prediction. And, you know, the ethics board never picked up the caucus scandal.
And
I can speak from experience because I was a special prosecutor for the ethics board on two separate cases independent of that.
Why didn't the elections, the ethics board ever pick up on the scandal? Just a quick follow-up before we go to Judge. Well, go ahead.
All right. Well, I think maybe I can speak to that, at least in context of what's wrong with the current bill. First of all, you're now going to have 12 commissioners instead of six, and you're going to split the agencies. I think you're going to lose some economy and some efficiency there. You're going to have more mouths to feed, if you will. And also, the current structure, there's some overlap between the laws on both sides, but it allows the staff to take resources when there's something going on in the elections area that needs more attention. You have some extra bodies you can put there and vice versa, so you're going to lose that. But the biggest thing that I think is a problem is something you haven't even mentioned so far, and that is that the new commissions will not be able to act, investigate things independently. They have to have sworn complaints from someone outside the commissions. I'll have to tell you that during my time on the GAB, many investigations were begun because of information that came to the board, either informally or press accounts suggesting there might have been a violation. In some cases, whistleblowers would come and say, I don't want to swear out a complaint, but you ought to know this is what's going on. Well, that goes away. Now you have to have a sworn complaint from a partisan. There were no sworn complaints before the caucus scandal because both sides were doing it. There was a de facto don't ask, don't tell policy going on. And I think we're going to revert to that type of thing. If one party's getting away with something and the other party knows it, but they're doing it too, no whistles will be blown. And now the folks that are supposed to be keeping an eye on these things will not have the authority to investigate independently.
Your thoughts, Judge?
I can't really add anything to those two points. The gridlock, the three Republicans, three Democrats, history will repeat itself. And dividing up the responsibilities once again and making it a reactive rather than a proactive agency, once again, you're going to be back to pre-2007 and you're going to have the same sort of shortcomings that led to the problems that caused the creation of the board in the first place.
But the sponsors of the bill said this will not curb the ability of local DAs to investigate potential criminal wrongdoing. Judge, you're a former DA. How do you feel about that claim?
Well, it won't prevent DAs from investigating, but for the most part, the DAs have so much on their plate. When you come to priorities in terms of what cases they're going to prosecute or investigate or have a law enforcement investigate for them, this would be pretty low on their totem pole. You have to remember, there's been no increase in the staff of DAs through state public financing in the state of Wisconsin, because they're state employees, since 1988. And the workload, sitting as a reserve judge here in Dane County, the workload is just monumental. And it's a real, real tribute to them that they still want to do it and can do it.
Are there some PSs on this before I move to a different
just
subject?
It is, Judge, a question of resources and priorities in overworked prosecutors' offices, but it's also a matter of expertise. Often, when you have a campaign finance violation or a potential one, the DAs will come to the GAB and say, help us out here. You know these laws. You administer these laws. Explain this to us. And now to say they're trying to sever that cooperation or that information link, I think that's silly.
Before I get into John Doe, I have one more question. There are four statewide elections. Now, this bill would create the two separate agencies, I think, at mid-year. After the spring primary, after the April election, prior to the partisan election, prior to the November presidential election, where we may have 3 million votes cast. Do you, you have talked about that you're worried that criminal conduct might not be pursued, but is there a potential threat disruption to the four statewide elections if you create these two agencies,
well,
commissions?
I sent a letter to the leadership of both the Senate and the Assembly in both parties.
And you offered a compromise
in
that
letter. And I offered a compromise. The compromise was, let's wait until we're through the presidential. Postpone it, not till June, the enactment. Postpone any action until after January of 2017, and then put two observers on our board.
Which also, but your letter also said they would be non-voting.
They'd be non-voting, but they'd have the privilege of hearing everything we do in open and closed sessions.
Yep.
And because it's our responsibility under the existing law to do the voting, but they would see how we operate. You know, in the 7 or 8 years that I've been there, we've never had anybody come just to observe our operation or inquire or say they'd like to meet with the board. And very honestly, that could be a little bit of our fault too, because judges are so sensitive to contact with people who are litigating in front of them.
Ex parte communications,
yeah,
Your Honor?
Ex parte, you bet.
That's all
and
the Latin
yeah,
I know. Okay.
But this would give us this opportunity. It would give them the opportunity to make the observation and then to come forward with what they feel would correct it or improve it.
But your compromise didn't get any traction or any interest
yet.
In the Capitol.
Yet.
You're adding the three-letter
word
yet?
I'm always hopeful, you know.
Okay. Any other PSs on that?
Just a quick comment. One of the pieces of information that came to us as board members was activity on what's called the helpline, the elections helpline, mm-hmm. and they would report because they staff stays on extra hours and extended hours as you come into elections, and the volume of calls that come in, and this is mainly from these 1,853 clerks and their election supervisors and so forth. I really am concerned that making these changes with the timing that's there, first of all, we're losing staff because people don't know what's going on. They have to worry about their own economic welfare. You're going to change management, both from the commission standpoint and the top administrators, and all this is going to happen just a matter of weeks or months, a few short months before a major election. I can't help but think that the people that are going to suffer are those folks on the front lines that look to the GAB for direction, guidance, training, assistance in administering elections. I think there's going to be a fall off until the new commission gets up and running.
Any thought on that, Your Honor?
I think that is absolutely right, that if things are in a stage of uncertainty and newness and everything is new, anything that comes up, any problem that comes up in the general election is going to be magnified hugely over what it would have been had the GAB stayed as it is beyond the election. This is speaking to Judge Nichols' proposal to hold off anything until after the election. I think that's imperative.
Okay, now let's turn to the John Doe. Could the GAB have said to the local district attorneys, we are not going to participate in the John Doe? Was that an option? And why did GAB feel it had to participate and join the John Does?
Well, we joined in a supportive role. We did not petition for the John Doe. The original John Doe petition was in Milwaukee County by District Attorney Chisholm. And then it went to four other counties. But we are a resource, as I said before the legislature testifying last week. We're a police agency when it comes to our areas of responsibility. And so we have an obligation when information is brought to our attention that involves these five chapters, in this case, campaign finance, we have an obligation if we have a reasonable suspicion, and there are facts out there, that there should be an investigation, which is what we did. And that was before the Doe. And Chisholm came to us because he went to the Attorney General Van Hollen first and asked for his assistance, and he finally declined and said he had a conflict of interest. But interestingly enough, he referred him in his letter to us.
Was there anybody on the GAB who said, let's not join the John Does, or was it unanimous, gentlemen?
Well, I would say it was
unanimous. The vote ultimately was unanimous.
Yeah.
But there was certainly discussion as to what our involvement should be and to what extent and so forth. Another point to add to what Jerry said, there are certain provisions in the campaign finance law that are civil violations that the GAB, and only the GAB, is empowered to prosecute. So To the extent that this investigation might have turned up some of those things, again, it was our job to be there and be ready to move forward with them if there were violations uncovered.
The GAB's decision to join the John Doe cost you your appointment, right, Judge?
Well, if you know that, then you know more than I do.
Well, I'm asking, do you believe that? Because I remember interviewing you on the phone and said, do you know why your appointment has been withdrawn by the governor?
At the time, there were at least three of us that were had not been confirmed. I think it's up to just about everybody now has
it
not
is.
Been confirmed. Judge Nickel, Judge Volke, and myself, there might have even been a fourth, and we were all present during the recalls. We were all present during the initiation of the John Doe. Those names went forward, mine didn't. So I don't know why I was singled out for special treatment, but...
Could it have been because of...
I don't know. I have yet,
okay.
I have yet to have anyone say, Deininger, we didn't want you there because this. I haven't heard that.
Some of the Republicans, you heard the term, GAB has engaged in witch hunts. That's their term, not mine, of Republicans. Can I ask this? Did GAB also investigate Democrats?
Absolutely. Yeah.
Okay. I want to get into why has the director, Kevin Kennedy, become such a lightning rod and a symbol of the need to change GAB, and you've heard Republican leaders say he just should not have that job. So why has it become personal with Mr. Kennedy? Bill?
What can it be other than political? He has defended the agency, he has said nothing but what's true, and he's been very active in his defense, and I think that's enough to have gathered the criticism. Judge Nichols' remarks garnered criticism as well, political criticism. I think Kevin Kennedy is an outstanding government employee and administrator.
Did he overstep the line? Remember, the criticism here is that GAB board is too much led by staff. So at any point, did Kevin go too far?
That was not true at all when I was on the board. And we were well informed of everything that was going on with the staff. And as I say, it was a remarkable staff and I think a remarkable leader.
Did Kevin go too far at any point, Your Honor?
No, and one thing you have to understand about Kevin Kennedy, he serves as our general counsel and director. He serves at our pleasure. He doesn't have a contract. There's no 4 years here. And we did let one higher up guy go during this administration of the GAB. So we look at performance. With Kevin, every year we do an evaluation. Two board members go out and talk to staff and talk to others, talk to clerks, to measure his performance and how he's doing. Not just what we hear from him in our meetings or on the telephone or through emails. And so they think we're a rogue agency, that he and others, you know, kind of feed us a line. Nothing could be absolutely so false.
As a veteran Capitol journalist, I was intrigued by the role played by leaked emails to the Wall Street Journal editorial page. What impact did they have on this whole discussion?
Well, the folks that did the leaking, I'm assuming, were under the same secrecy orders that the government accountability and anybody else involved with the John Doe's was. And the problem, of course, is that they were very selective in what was leaked. That's why, from our perspective, it's too bad it all couldn't be opened up and then people can see the everything that was there and decide for themselves whether the GAB acted properly or not. But when you pick and choose, you can make anything look bad.
Did you learn anything from the documents that were leaked to the Wall Street Journal? Or had you seen everything?
Especially the
memo from Mr. Falk that he talked about Sheeple?
Yeah, I hadn't seen that. Of course, I left before some of that happened. So
I had not seen that. We don't review staff emails. But we do have a policy, and it's through Kevin, to all of our employees that they cannot be involved in partisan politics and can't, do that type of thing when you're on a job. And
Should Mr. Falk not have written that sheeple memo?
I would agree with that. I thought it was very poor judgment.
Very poor judgment. Okay. This bill will be up for debate on Wednesday. What's your final plea to the State Assembly? Mr. Nickel?
Well, my plea is to, what difference does it make if you postpone it for another 6 months? And give us two observers and let the public then have all the information that that they need and then meet on. But my worry is the loss of staff and turnover and the disruption of the election process, because we have the spring judicial elections and then we go to the fall elections, and that's a lot of responsibility for this agency. And we are getting a lot of support from the clerks throughout the state because they know what a good job we've done in helping them manage these campaigns, which I think Wisconsin's always been a leading example of how elections are run.
And Judge Dining, are your advice to the chamber you used to serve in, sir?
Well, I think that they shouldn't be trying to fix something that's not broken. If there are changes that are required in campaign finance laws due to court decisions, fine. Let's move forward on that. If there are some things that could be done better, that the structure of the agency could be tweaked to address maybe some of the things that came up in the audit, fine. But to just eliminate and go back to the bad old days makes no sense to me.
That's right, and I would urge them to consider what commentators and scholars have said about the board over time, that it's probably the top model for a state elections ethics regulatory board. And in terms of its performance, just 2 years ago, the Pew Charitable Trust said that Wisconsin was third in the country and at the top of regulating elections. Now, without that, if it's changed, we have the problem we've just been discussing about the upcoming election and the confusion that it can cause. But I think in the long term, to turn this back into a partisan board, partisan agency, reactive agency, would be a tragic mistake.
Well, just last week, Speaker Voss's newsletter, supporters are wrong to call it a national model, excuse me, because no other state followed it. Any quick response to that?
A model doesn't always have to be followed to be a model.
In most other states, scandals have been on one side of the aisle or another. Here, there were problems on both sides of the aisle. That's what created the atmosphere that allowed this to happen. So we were unique in that sense, and I think that's why it hasn't happened elsewhere.
Any PS? Mr. Chair?
No. I would agree with both my colleagues here.
Okay. Thank you very much. I want to thank former Judge William Ike, David Dininger, and Gerald Nickel, current GAB chairman, for coming in to talk about a major issue and the bill that will be scheduled to be debated Wednesday in the State Assembly. Gentlemen, thanks very much.
Thank you.
Thank you.